Hey, Joe Lauder with you for the Hack Podcast. Russia had a massive national vote this week that means Vladimir Putin could be in power until 2036, when he's in his 90s. It was part of this major national vote to change the Russian constitution. And there was just like one little point in there about allowing him to serve. So we're going to find out what that means for Russia, but also for the rest of the world. Also, the lockdown has started again in those 10 Melbourne postcodes. And honestly, it must just really suck for people living there and businesses. So we check in to see what the mood's been like on the first day. And you might remember that hectic post from Donald Trump saying, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Well, it's caused a lot of major international brands to pull their ads from Facebook over its handling of it. It's more bad PR for Facebook, but the question is, will it seriously change anything in the company? First, though, let's go to Russia.
Hack. We want to be sure that Putin will continue same policy. Same policy means a more consistent policy and more active policy of building up a democratic state with a free market economy.
On Triple J.
President for life. That's what a lot of people are saying after a big national vote in Russia that's given Vladimir Putin the option of staying in power until he's almost 90. On the surface, the vote is about updating the Russian constitution, but critics say it's been used as a cover to remove the limit on how long a president can serve for. Now, in a moment, we're going to find out what that means for the rest of us. But first, here's Stephen Stockwell and some very stirring music to help you get behind the motherland.
Hey, gang. I hope you like Vladimir Putin because it looks like he's going to be in charge of Russia for a while longer. Like, almost his entire life longer.
His critics say it's just a blatant power grab.
Russians have spent the last week voting, not for Putin himself, but in a national vote, a referendum to update the constitution.
To bring voters in, some good old electioneering. Each ballot paper comes with a lottery ticket, with prizes from cash to cars.
Putin's been in power in some form in Russia since 1999. He started out as prime minister and became president the next year. He could only do that for two terms, though, because of a limit in the Russian constitution. So in 2008, he went back to being prime minister. Then in 2012, he became the president again. And now he's getting close to the end of his second term. Part of this referendum is to change that two-term rule, resetting Putin's count and opening up the possibility of him staying in power until 2036, at which point he would be 86.
Early indications were that 70%+ voted in favour.
One of the odd things about this process is that Russia's new constitution is already printed and on sale in all the bookshops here.
Putin's current term as president doesn't expire until 2024, and while everywhere else might be a bit sus on him, Russians actually reckon he's doing a pretty good job.
He's the best president of all the presidents. With him, Russia will survive.
Even though many people dislike him, I think he's right, and our country is flourishing.
People live well now. The standard of living has increased. Now each family has at least two cars. That's an indicator he was able to do it.
I would very much like Putin to stay while he can. He cares about children and the young, and he does everything to be an example for them.
The changes to term limits aren't all that this vote is about, though, and they weren't even Putin's idea. They actually came from Russian lawmaker Valentina Tereshkova, who was the first woman in space and absolutely came up with this plan by herself. The referendum campaign has instead focused on other changes, with Vladimir Putin saying that it's really about upholding Russian values.
We're not just voting for amendments clothed in clear legal rules. We vote for the country in which we want to live, with modern education and healthcare, with reliable social protection of citizens, with effective power, accountable to society.
There are loads of things that this vote will change in the constitution. There's stuff about pensions, an amendment enforcing a national minimum wage, another that will block same-sex marriage by defining marriage as only between a man and a woman.
One would give President Putin criminal immunity for life.
Even though the changes look set to pass, not everyone wants Putin to hang around. You haven't seen angry people on the streets because protests and rallies have been banned thanks to coronavirus. But there are plenty of people who would like to see someone else take the lead.
There is a generational gap, and the younger people
are clearly more in favor of the change.
It's actually terrifying because we are cut off from our possibility to choose our leader.
18-year-old first-time voter Sergei has only ever lived under the rule of Putin, and he told the ABC that he's had enough.
It's a very hard situation here right now, but I really hope something will change their minds and they will try to make this place a better one.
Triple J. That's Stephen Stockwell reporting. Now with us is Dr. Leonard Petrov, and he's the Sydney lecturer at the International College of Management Sydney. He's also an expert in all things Russian, and he's going to help us understand this a bit more. Dr. Petrov, to start with, these laws have already passed the Russian parliament, and we just heard that the constitution is in shops already in Russia. Why did Putin take it to a national vote?
Well, good afternoon. I don't think it's very good morning for Russia, which just woke up understanding that Putin is going to rule the country as long as he wants. Well, basically, there was no doubt about it, but now it has been codified in the Constitution, which you absolutely correctly mentioned is already on every bookstore and approved, rubber-stamped by the Russian Parliament, Duma. And the question is, why bothered? It looked like President Putin simply wanted to prove for his own ego that he's still popular, that it's still 77% of the population supported the Constitution supported the 206 amendments with one question, do you support it or not? It looks like President Putin wanted to demonstrate to his subordinates as well that he is, he has the power. He is going to have the power for another 16 years or rather 18 years because, 20 years because the next presidential election was supposed to be in 2024. So why is all this happening so early? Again, it looks like that something is happening in President Putin's head rather than in the domestic politics, because there's no clear opposition. There's no alternative candidate. There was no alternative version of the Constitution to be offered to the population simply to support these 206 amendments which President Putin decided to impose on the country, which hasn't recovered from coronavirus pandemic yet.
Yeah.
So there are many questions about it.
So many. And one of them, I guess, that a lot of people would be asking is, can we trust the outcome of this vote?
No, certainly we cannot. First, the regular voting law, Russian voting law, was not implemented for this charade, which was neither called a referendum nor elections. It was so simply called voting. And it had absolutely no legal basis. The Russian Constitution was not supposed, certain chapters of the Russian Constitution was not supposed to be changed. They were deliberately locked back in 1993 when the previous constitution, it's already today we can call it previous, was introduced. Despite of all this, 206 amendments were introduced just overnight by the group of supporters, actors, sportsmen, and business people were convened in one room to propose several, and even the former cosmonaut woman, the space exploration legend Valentina Tereshkova, a few weeks later showed up in Russian Duma proposing the 206th amendment, saying, "Well, why shouldn't we keep President Putin in the presidential seat for another 12 years?" So there was no President Putin accidentally was passing by Duma. He went to the podium and gave a speech, and the Duma unilaterally adopted this 206th Amendment. So there's no legal basis. There was no expectation that it's going to go any other way but being supported by 72%, but surprisingly, 77% supported out of how many? There was no clear law saying anything about the procedure. There were no independent observers. Media was simply mocking this travesty of election. And, well, now we have 77 against 22% of we don't know how many people voted.
Yeah, right. And everyone listening would know Putin based on his international reputation, his reputation here in Australia. But what's his popularity like in Russia?
Well, see, Russia is not homogenous. There's some electoral sultanates like the Chechen Republic in the Caucasus, which traditionally votes 99.9% in favor of whatever is offered. Some areas are more remote. See, Russia is a huge country, and the presidential party, the United Russia, is not popular at all. So President Putin often tries to distance from that, and it often loses elections. So that's why there was the rush. The general situation in the economic situation is deteriorating, and younger population feels it's much more pain rather than the pensioners, people who are getting their salaries from the military industrial complex, public servants. They traditionally vote in favor of president and his initiatives, while millennials who are either unemployed or look for opportunities to get employment overseas traditionally don't even watch TV or get interested in the current politics in Russia.
On the text line, someone else says, if Putin's so unpredictable now, I can't wait till he becomes old and senile. Look out, world. And just on that point, what does this mean for Australia and the rest of the world, Dr. Petrov?
Well, if President Putin stays in power according to this newly adopted constitution until 2036, he's going to be 84 years old. He is already not in a very good shape. He has been in power for the previous 20 years. I saw his most recent public address, and he looked quite frail and not very concentrated on what he was saying. And the current year, it's the celebrations of the 75th anniversary of the great victory, well, the Second World War victory. So I believe that President Putin believes that he is in good shape and he can stay president indefinitely. And that worries many people because he controls the nuclear button. Russia has the nuclear arsenal, which can destroy not only the United States, but the whole world. And being in a state of mind which permitted him to go ahead with these constitutional amendments right now, I'm just simply fearing to think how apt and capable he is going to be when he is 84. So the world is not getting safer with this constitutional amendments. And also it's a very sad day for democracy in Russia. In addition to in the courts, media, and elections, now constitution has become totally controlled and manipulated by the by the regime, and so many things can happen. And there's no checks and balances or counterbalance to what president might decide to go for.
Well, it's going to make it for an interesting couple of decades potentially. Dr. Lena Petrov, thank you so much for joining us and helping us to unpack this a bit more.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
And on the text line, Natalia says, Putin is not going anywhere and no one can change anything. So why care? Russia is a century away from democracy. You just have to learn to live with it.
As more top brands pull their advertising from Facebook, the group behind the boycott says that Facebook still hasn't done enough.
On Triple J.
Some of the biggest brands in the world, like Coca-Cola, Ford, Adidas, and Starbucks, have pulled their ads from Facebook for at least a little while. It's part of a boycott over what people are allowed to say and get away with on Facebook, essentially, especially the US president. You remember Trump's post saying, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. That was left up on Facebook, even though Twitter actually hid it. And people really aren't happy about that. Facebook's forever been saying that it's just a platform and they don't want to be the referee for these kinds of issues about freedom of speech. But it seems like people just aren't buying that excuse anymore. So to chat a bit about more about what this means for the company and if it's going to change anything going forward, we've got Casey Newton with us, and he's the Silicon Valley editor at the website The Verge. Casey, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
It's great to be here.
Casey, we'll get into the Facebook advertisers ban in a moment, but really this all goes back to Facebook's handling of a post by President Donald Trump last month around the start of the Black Lives Matter protests. How did Facebook deal with that post?
It dealt with it by not doing anything with it, right? This was the post that said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, which was a kind of reference to some bad stuff that had happened here a long time ago. Twitter wound up hiding it behind a warning screen. Snap wound up taking the president out of promotion in its Discover tab. But Facebook said, we looked at it, and according to our policies, this doesn't violate any of our rules. So we're not going to do anything. And it's sort of been dealing with the fallout ever since.
Is that right, that there aren't policies? It doesn't violate Facebook's policy, or is it really in the interpretation?
It's really hard to write one set of speech rules that apply to the 1.73 billion people who use Facebook every single day. There are something like 100 billion messages that get sent every day on Facebook. Some percentage of those are going to be bad, but to try to design one set of rules and then enforce that set of rules can be a challenge. So, you know, I personally think that that post was an incitement to violence. And the evidence for that is that there was violence afterwards. The National Guard did commit violence against peaceful protesters after that. But at the time, Facebook just didn't quite think that it met the threshold.
What has the fallout been from Facebook's decision not to do anything about that post?
I think the most important thing that's happened since then is that we've seen this advertiser boycott. And so over the past week or so, we've seen more than 400 advertisers come out and say they are not going to advertise on either Facebook or Instagram this month.
What do these companies want?
It's a long list. I think there are about 10 demands that they've issued. They range from doing a better job at removing hate speech and misinformation to, if you're the victim of hate speech on Facebook, having the ability to talk to a live person who works at the company. They also want Facebook to submit to regular civil rights audits, and they want Facebook to hire someone whose whole job it is to look at new products to consider whether they might have sort of negative effects on minority communities.
And with this advertising ban, do you think it's going to have any impact, or is it having any impact on Facebook's revenue, or is this more of like an image and a PR issue for them?
I do think it is more of a image and PR issue right now. There are sort of two kinds of advertisers on Facebook. There's the brand advertisers like the Coca-Cola and the Starbucks. And then there's the direct response advertisers, who are the people in your Instagram feed telling you to, you know, buy dresses and sunglasses and masks and that sort of thing. And it's that second category that is a much bigger percentage of Facebook's revenue. Something like 90% of revenue are direct response advertisers. And so far, we haven't seen them pull out at all. So it's been a very small portion of Facebook's revenue that has been affected so far.
You're listening to Hack with me, Joe Lauder. I'm filling in for Avani Dias all this week. And I'm joined by US tech journalist Casey Newton from The Verge. And we're talking about the latest advertiser boycott of Facebook over its handling of a recent post by Donald Trump. Casey, this goes to a much bigger issue that seems to have been plaguing Facebook for quite some time, and it is around how they deal with freedom of speech and what people post on their platform. And they seem to think that they're just a platform and they don't have responsibility. Is that kind of your read of where Mark Zuckerberg and the company stands?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they would say is they just host so much speech that there's bound to be some bad things that get said on the platform. And so the question is, do you blame the person who said the bad thing, or do you blame Facebook? And a lot of people these days really do want to blame Facebook and have Facebook take more responsibility for the hate speech and the other bad posts that are up on the site. You know, what Zuckerberg has said is we're just living at a time when there's a lot of criticism of the idea of free speech in general. Free speech doesn't have as many champions as it once did. And Zuckerberg just sees that as dangerous. He would rather allow more speech, even if it's terrible speech, because he believes that the best answer to that is to just encourage more speech and to kind of encourage more debate rather than to have someone like him, who, let's remember, is unelected, unaccountable, owns the majority of the company, making decisions about what all of us all around the world can post on the internet.
Yeah, what are the kind of things that Facebook could be doing, especially, like you said, with some pages that are very controversial, incite hate speech, that kind of thing? Are there things that they can be doing beyond taking it down and deplatforming them, say, like giving them less prominence or trying to like stop them spreading so far?
I think that they just need to be much more careful in general with their recommendation algorithms. We know, for example, that for a long time, if you were a new mother and you joined a Facebook group for new moms in your area, Facebook's algorithms would introduce you to anti-vax groups, right? To groups that, you know, falsely believe that vaccines are harmful. And so as a result, anti-vax groups have exploded over the past several years, right? And it's not because Facebook did that on purpose. It just wasn't paying attention. And so too often with Facebook, we find that something that they weren't paying attention to wound up having a huge consequence. So, you know, for me, that's kind of the number one place that I think they should look. But then I also think we should talk about whether Facebook should be as big as it is. Should it be allowed to continue to own Instagram? Should it be allowed to continue to own WhatsApp? Should it be allowed to ever acquire another social network ever again? I tend to think the answer should be no.
Yeah. And Casey, just lastly, Facebook's had plenty of scandals and, you know, Cambridge Analytica was the last big one. Is there this sense that maybe they'll just try and weather this storm and hope that people move on and forget about it? Or is this something much bigger that's happening?
They're taking it pretty seriously, but they do assume that it is going to blow over. Mark Zuckerberg has said that to his staff during an internal meeting. Again, I think the thing to look for is it's not so much these big brand advertisers that have the household names that you and I know, like Coca-Cola and Starbucks. It's really more these 7 million small and medium-sized businesses that use the platform for these direct response ads. If they start dropping off in large numbers, then I think that's when Facebook would really have a problem.
Casey, thanks so much for joining us from the States.
Thank you for having me.
Hack on Triple J.
That's Casey Newton, and he is the Silicon Valley editor at the website The Verge. Now, you're listening to Hack with me, Joe Lauder, and on the text line, we're getting so many messages about Facebook. Someone says, I've had many, many, many successful Twitter reports and zero successful Facebook reports. For these things, I think they're worse. Facebook should be ashamed. Someone else says, the less ads I have to see, the better. And someone else said, who decided what to censor and what to let through? Whatever happened to free speech? Well, right now, we're going to find out what the mood's been like for people who went back into lockdown today in those 10 Melbourne postcodes. And find out how it's going to affect businesses in these zones.
77 new cases in Victoria.
3021. There will only be four reasons that you are permitted to leave your house, and only if you really have to. 0423046.
The cafe here, which, you know, up until yesterday was having limited seated, is now back to takeaway only.
The Premier's already flagged the prospect of booze bus style police operations.
If you are out of your home for anything other than a permitted reason, on the spot fines apply. 3060.
To ensure that we can keep those numbers down so that no new postcodes need to be considered.
On Triple J. Yeah, it must be so tough for people living in these 10 postcodes in Melbourne that have gone back into lockdown today. For most of us, it felt like things were maybe starting to go back to normal before the Melbourne spike. And in some cases, in these areas of Melbourne, there are streets where one side of the road is back in lockdown and on the other side, it's not. If you're in the area, you can text me on 0439 75 7555 and let me know how it's feeling there. You can also call in on 1300 055 36. Now, there's been so much going on in this space at the moment. There's been another 77 people diagnosed with coronavirus in Victoria today, mostly in those hotspot areas, but not all. And also earlier this morning, the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, was asked about these rumours that some security guards who were part of the hotel quarantine got sick because they'd hooked up with people in the quarantine.
Well, if those claims are correct, then that is completely and utterly unacceptable, and we would encourage the Victorian authorities to throw the book at them.
Yeah, that's some serious Stockholm syndrome stuff going on there. Victoria Roads has also come out and said that heaps of people have tried to change their legal address through them so they can get around the lockdowns. You don't actually need proof of anything to change your address, but the cops have said, of course, the cops are going to be checking people's licenses. And Vic Roads have said that they're going to manually review all the address changes that have come from the lockdown zone. Now, to find out a bit more about how this has been for people in that area, Adrian from Brunswick West is here. Adrian, it was your first day in lockdown. How's it been for you?
Hey guys. It was a bit interesting. I won't lie. I did wake up with a little bit of anxiety just because I wasn't sure what I was allowed to do really in the area and how strict it was going to be. But yeah, it was a bit disheartening, to be honest, just knowing that like what we thought was coming to an end is now back at one. So
yeah, has it been frustrating?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually like still working. I work in retail, so I'm still considered an open essential service. So I am lucky enough that I am still able to sort of get dressed and get up and leave the house, I guess, as opposed to some other people which will be in like a full lockdown again. But even where I work is still in a lockdown suburb as well. So even coming to work has been odd again because the whole centre, I work at High Point out in the west, so like the whole centre's locked down again, so shops are shutting again. It's very depressing, I guess, is like just a really good word to describe it, because obviously things are looking to go one way and they've gone literally all the way back.
It must be so tough. And were you checked when you were going to work? Have you noticed an increased presence at the moment?
So this morning, like, I obviously wasn't allowed to go to my usual gym. So then this morning I woke up and I was like, well, I'm going to go for a big walk. And I expected to see probably more, like, testing and things going around and police. I didn't see too much, but I did notice just, like, no, like, mobile vans or anything, but definitely more police presence on the roads in my area. And there was some, like people, official people, like looks like they were going around doing home testing.
Yeah, right. There's been so much door knocking. Hey, thanks so much for telling us about your experience, Adrian.
No worries.
And we've also got Narissa here. Now, Narissa, you own a cafe called Lankin Tucker in Brunswick West. You've gone through your first lockdown and now you're back in another one?
We are indeed.
How's that been?
This one's a little bit different.
Yeah, what's it been like for you today, but also just
pretty
knowing?
Pretty quiet. A lot of confused customers asking us questions, I guess, and also concerned as to how we're going to keep going through the next month. So we've got a lot of loyal customers, so that's the topic of conversation for all of today, really.
Yeah, and were you planning on ramping back up and kind of opening up a bit more before this happened?
Yeah, we climatized to sort of that 20-person, you know, rule. And it took us a week to kind of get into the groove of that. And then that was sort of settled, hiring a few new people as well, which all just backflipped yesterday. So we went back to minimal staff, obviously, and takeaway only.
How tough was that, having to tell your staff that as well?
That's probably the worst part of the whole thing, because people are relying on some form of income. And if they haven't been with us long enough, they can't get JobKeeper. So yeah, it is really hard to tell people that.
And what was the conversation like with your customers today? Was there, I guess it's the topic that everyone is talking about.
Yeah, they like I said, they're concerned for how we're going to survive, and they're happy to support us, but they're also a little bit confused as well, talking about we're kind of between, like, we're very close to a lot of different suburbs, we're sort of boundary in between suburbs. So people are like, oh, can I come and get a coffee? And so they're a little bit confused. That's what kind of what I got out of the day, that no one's really sure what they can and can't do.
Yeah, I imagine it would be incredibly confusing. It was hard enough the first time. Well, I just wanted to say good luck for the next month. I hope it all goes okay for you and you're still there on the other side. That's Narissa, and she's the owner of the Brunswick West Cafe, Lankin Tucker. Thanks so much for joining us, Narissa.
Hack on Triple J.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow for the Friday Shake-Up. Huzzah!